Hey, yo, what's up? This is Rick Thorne, the Biker in Black. Welcome to the show. On this episode, I got a really good friend of mine, Tony Lovato from the band Mest. I'm going to hit him up right now. Let's do this. What's going on, dude? What are you doing?
Rough night, buddy. Rough night.
What do you mean? What went on last night? It was rough. What's going on?
I partied like a fucking, not like a proper 9-year-old on a school night. Went to the Coast 103.5 private Christmas party at, what's the one across from Disney? California?
Wait, why do you guys say, private? Like I wasn't invited or something.
Because you weren't invited because it's kind of, it was fucking like a contest winners type of thing. Yeah. Like
you take
call
your
in.
Yeah. What's go ahead. Up? Tell me. Yeah.
They take my fat. What? Is that what you said? They take my fat?
No, not you're not fat. It's your family, bro. Jeez.
Oh, my family. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fat family. yeah, it was me, my daughter Rebel, 18-month-old, son London, and son Dillinger, my wife, pregnant wife, who was in labor pretty much the whole time we were there.
Wait, so you have three and one on the way?
I have four and one on the way. Stepdaughter, Jaden, she couldn't go because there's a certain amount of tickets. So I have to give her an extra Christmas present.
Wow. You got a big family. I remember talking to you specifically when you first were going to have your first kid.
And you were London. Sweet. Yeah. You went to the baby shower.
I did. And you were like, not worried. But you're like, I don't know, man. I'm just going to, yeah. And I was like, yeah, well, you could always sell them.
Yeah, no.
I'm kidding. It's a joke.
No, you can return them, but it's like 3 days. I looked it up.
Oh, is that the new thing? Is that the new deal?
At the hospital.
I'm just kidding. You know, I'm kidding. But no, you were like, I don't know what's going to happen. Like my life. Like, you know, you were.
I think like, if you don't have those fucking questions when you're having your first kid, something's wrong with you. You know what I mean?
I had them. I still have them. Like, why'd I have these?
Everybody that I know that's having kids, you know, a little bit later and stuff, they're just like, I'm like, you ready? They're like, I think so. I'm like, no, you're not. I'm like, you're never ready. That's the part of it. You know what I mean? You're not supposed to be ready for it. Like, who fucking, especially like in our style of work and what we do, like, who's going to be like, fucking stoked, ready for a kid, bro? Like, no, you're not.
No.
You just go with it, like everything else.
You do. And then when they turn teenagers, you're like, why the fuck do I have these things?
Yeah, well,
it's another joke.
No, none of these are jokes. Jokes are funny because they're 50% real and 50% you're not supposed to laugh at.
I know this is true. Or you laugh at it because it's so true that you're like, dude, that's pretty funny.
Right. Yeah, we got a step. My stepdaughter's 15, so.
You get it.
Entering that fun fucking world. And
yeah.
And then I have a baby on the way to do on Christmas. I hope he comes.
Boy or girl?
Little boy.
Oh, cool, dude.
So I hope that he comes either today or on December 14th. Because coincidentally, my son's name is London, who you know, he's 9 years old.
Yep.
My baby boy, his name's going to be Clash. And the Clash released London Calling the single December 7th, 1972, which would be, I don't know, was it 42 years ago? And released the record London Calling like a week later on December 14th. So my son, London, the Clash, would be pretty fucking weird.
That's pretty cool, actually. I mean,
weird coincidence. Yeah.
I mean, it's better than if it was like, I mean, you know, like if it was a Bee Gees or something, that'd be a different world. You know?
Or if he's born on his due date, I got to name him Jesus Christ. So
it's true.
He's a fucking Christmas baby due date at least.
So then he's going to have that birthday. Like it's for your birthday and Christmas.
Yep.
Oh man, mm-hmm. I feel bad for him already. Jeez.
I know, dude. We already decided half birthdays because it's bullshit, dude.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Half birthdays now I get fucked because my birthday is June 20th, which is literally, but it's fine. He can have it, dude. I'm fucking old. I don't want birthdays anyways at this point.
Yeah, they get like, there's no point of them now. It's just like, all right, cool. Damn. I'm
you
older.
Actually don't want them this time. You know what I mean? It's like, it gets worse.
It does. And, you know, it's weird with your kids too, because when kids are little, they're the raddest. Everything's new and everything's exciting. When they get older, it's just like, it's still awesome. I love my kids. I talk so much shit, but I love my kids so much. We're super close. but things just change, you know? And even with the kids, birthdays change. Like at 17, my daughter, it wasn't like when she was seven, you know what I mean? So
yeah,
enjoy it, enjoy life. And it's just crazy to see you have such, not crazy in a bad way, but awesome. Like to see you have such a big family when, you know, you were like having all those questions about having your first kid. And then now you're just like, do you find yourself being more of a family man than you thought you were? Or were you always kind of like that?
No, I was always into family. I mean, I grew up in a household where, tiny little house on the south side of Chicago. We were like, I was just talking with this, to my buddy at the car dealership, because I told him how many people were in my family and my dad's family and stuff. And this Mexican dude, and he's like, oh, you guys are like a Mexican family. I'm like, yeah, we were like the white Mexican family in a heavily Latino neighborhood anyways. But yeah, like, you know, the kids that didn't have houses to live in, or like not a lot of love in their homes or whatever it may be, like lived with us and stayed with us. We had this tiny 2-bedroom house, but now I had people that lived with us for like 7 years at a time, friends that would stay with us night after night, you know, like our house was the house. So I grew up around that type of environment. And then my father's from 11.
Wow.
So, wow. And okay. His brother, my uncle bought the house that they all grew up in across the street from us. He actually bought that house, and like 4 cousins live in there, 2 cousins down the block, like always been around it. So like, to me, it was always like one of those, it was weird though. Like you said, like my son, London's 9 years old, and he went to his baby shower.
Wow, nine years already? That's crazy, bro. That's
yeah.
Crazy.
I mean, he's my first, but, and then my wife had two, and then now we have two together. So I sort of went from like 1 to 5.
Yeah. Real quick, dude.
Had to sell that Cadillac and get that fucking Kia 7-seater, baby.
Soccer dad.
Fuck yeah, dude.
Soccer mom, dad.
It's cool as you get for a 7-seater, man. That's all you're going to get.
Hey, dude, kids do that to you. I tell everybody, like, you're worried about having a kid, or you're going to have a kid and you don't know what you're going to do. And you just find a way to make it work. No one ever really tells you, like, you got to get rid of some things. You just, you know, kids change. Kids, obviously, if a kid doesn't change you, that's the problem. You know what I mean?
For sure. For sure.
But you got
And like my old man said it best too. Like, I think I called him like fucking Christmas Day, like the 2013 before. He was the last person I told about London. And he's like, I can hear like hesitancy in your voice. I'm like, I don't know, man. I'm just like, you know, this is new to me. I don't know what the fuck's going to go on. And he was like, you're good, dude. He was like, when you and your brother were born, he was like, there's some shit I had to stop doing because I wasn't in a good place. He's like, and I had to stop doing it for you guys. He's like, you're good. He's like, what do you say? He goes, you don't have to change. This kid's just going to add to your life. Like, he's like, you're good. You're in a good place. You don't need to change who you are and what you're doing and shit. Like, so I was like, that was, you know, made me feel once the old man's approval's there, then you're like, okay.
Yeah. Well, he's right. If you're in a good place, then you just, you know. For me, I remember kids just pushed you to say, all right, let me get on my game even more for what to do, you know, instead of like losing my identity. Like, I don't take you as this way neither, but you can't lose your identity just because you have kids. You still got to have your own identity in the things that you do. You're just working overtime because you got kids now, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's like,
have you found that hard for yourself though? Like staying like as, you know, a musician and pursuing your dreams musically and being consistent as much as you can, you never walked away from it, right? Have you found that to be difficult, or is that just something that, like I said, work overtime?
Yeah, it's definitely good. It's like overtime shit where you're like, every time I fucking add a kid to the group, I got to add a tour to the year. You know what I mean? I got to pay for that shit. So,
exactly.
But no, like it's definitely like, yeah, it's hard though. Cause for me, like, I guess emotionally, it's that fine line of, okay, I need to work and I know that, right? So any opportunity I get to work, I'm fucking, which I would do anyways, whether or not I have kids, because it's what we do, right? We got to make money when we can because we ain't got no fucking 401k. But
right,
there's always that like fine line of like, am I away from home too much and not spending enough time with my kids? Because there is that balance too, you know what I mean? You can't like, just because you're paying the bills doesn't give you an excuse to be an absent father, which I'm not in any way, but I'm saying, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think, you know, there's dads that make fucking $500,000 a year doing whatever fucking corporate job they do. And it's like, they take the family on vacation once a week or once a year. And then it's like, okay, everything's good. It's like, kids growing up without. So I want to make sure that I'm there as much as I can be too. So, but yeah, it's definitely a balance, and definitely pushes you to like, you got to keep doing what you're doing, you know? Like, and
yeah.
I think kids too, for me at least, I've always said this, like, give me an excuse to keep my youth going, to be, you know what I mean? Like, it's fun, like doing a Disneyland shit, or like being with my 12 and my 9-year-old, and they're like getting into like certain jokes that are inappropriate. I'm like trying to like discipline them at the same time as like laughing with them. Like, all right, it's funny, but like, don't be saying that shit in public. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
there's the balancing act, I guess you'd say.
Well, and what's crazy about that, you're absolutely right. And what's crazy is I'm going through the phase now where, you know, my daughter's 17, my son's 15, my daughter's Ooh. A senior. It's going to be like, you know, they're going to be living their life. They have, you know, especially my daughter, you know, she got a car and then it's like, bye-bye, you know, they're living their life and adjusting for me, because I was a single parent and being so heavily involved with your kids. There's a time where you're like, they keep you young, but then now I'm like, okay, now I'm realizing that my kids are like, you know, going to move on, or not move on, but, you know, become their person, who they got to be.
Sure.
And then I got to find ways to keep myself young solo now. Cause I've been, dude, you know what I mean? So it's like, I tell anyone that has the young ones, enjoy the ride, man. I'm telling you, because it may seem exhausting or whatever, but when it's over, you're like, you miss it. You know what I mean?
If Absolutely.
You really care about your kids, you know?
I mean, even with London being 9, I already feel that way. Like, where I'm like, cause when me and my wife got together, it was like 4 years ago, about four and a half years ago, he was that 4 or 5 years old.
Right.
And now he's like 9, and like, he all of a sudden had his little best friend. So I've had like 4 years of like him hanging out with her son, who they're like, which is great for them. Have like the little best friend. I mean, they do everything together, but I'm sort of like, fuck, like those past 4 years, like I feel like I missed out on a lot sometimes. It's probably me doing the overthinking type of shit. And then with having the 18 month old and the fucking baby on the way, I'm like, I told my wife, I said, we have to make sure that these kids know that like they're still loved, and we keep them involved with everything, because they're gonna go out and start doing on shit on their own anyways. And I'm like, I need them to stay involved. Like, I don't want to miss out. Like you said, it goes by. I mean, your son at my baby shower, which was what, fuck, 9 years ago. How old is he? So he was like 5 years old.
Five, 6 years old. Yeah.
I remember he's a little ass dude. So like,
yeah, my daughter must
last
have
time
been
I saw
seven.
Him, he was fucking taller than me when you brought him to the house. Like, the dude's fucking huge.
He's even taller now. It's crazy. It's crazy. But, you know, I'm just proud, I guess, you know, with all this talk about family and stuff, you know, I'm like super proud of you, because, you know, you're doing it, and you've been able to maintain your identity and the things that you love. And I know from experience that stuff ain't easy. And I don't think a lot of people understand that, but you can do it. Anyone out there listening, you can still follow your dreams and have kids. It's just, it's a different trip. And do you find that balance though, to be difficult? Cause we talked about briefly, like going on a tour and stuff like that. But like, when you're home, you're not hanging out with your friends as much. You're with your family.
Yeah. I think
things change, right?
Yeah.
Obviously.
I think I probably make it a point that when I'm on the road, it's like, okay, I don't have to get up early to take a kid to school. I ain't got to change a shit diaper. I don't have to bring him to an after school program. I don't have baseball games to go to. And it's like, wake up, sound check, play a show, hang out with friends, you know, like,
yeah,
I get to pretend I'm in my early 20s again. So I do that, and I make sure I have a good time, so that when I'm at home, I'm like, okay, I'm home. This is a different life. This is waking up at 6. Like today, my son didn't even go to school because of the Disney fucking thing we did. But waking up at 6:30 every morning, dude, I didn't fucking go to school. Like, as a kid, I got kicked out of school when I was 15. So waking up at 6:30 in the morning for me every day fucking sucks. I've never done that my entire life, you know, but it's like, kids got to get to school. So this is what I do. So yeah, when I'm at home, it's home life, and out on the road, it's fucking hang out with your friends and act like, you know.
Oh, I think I lost you there for a second. Where'd you go? Hold on a second. Can you hear me? I lost the audio with you. Where'd you go? Hello? Can you hear me? I can't hear you. That's weird. What's that? What happened here? Where'd you go? No, 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 no. Stay tuned. We have a little audio issue here. Okay, hang on a second. What's up, bro? What happened?
This works.
There you go. That's it right there.
Want to use that?
Yeah, we got it.
Okay. I don't know. Something just fucking randomly cut out on my computer. It's brand new.
Whatever, whatever, dude. It's cool that we could do. I choose to do Zoom on podcasts because I feel like, you know what, dude? Like, I like to be in person, but like I'm DIY, bro, with this podcast, and I got a lot of listeners on the Spotify more, the audio, and the video is growing. So like I kind of like the Zoom, but so I'm kind of used to these bugs and stuff. Shit happens, but it's kind of cool we could do this. But we were talking about like graduation. Did you ever go back and get your GED or did you not graduate?
No,
I don't mean to focus on that. I'm just saying that like do you see yourself like with your kids, you're going to be like, no, dude, you're graduating.
Yeah. I mean, you have to, right? That's the fucking
yeah.
proper thing to do. Like just because I fucking didn't care doesn't mean I still have to try to implicate the proper things on them. I just, dude, I was just a fucking troubled teen. I was the idiot, you know, like
what? What were you doing? Like just
I just got
shit?
In a lot of trouble, dude. Like just a lot of fights and just I really didn't give a fuck about school. I just never did. I was in like all the gifted classes. I was like the smart kid all through life. And then just hit a point where like maybe it wasn't challenging anymore. Maybe it just wasn't interesting. I don't know. And so right when I was around, once I entered high school and I realized like you'd go walking past like the front doors of the high school. And I was like, I could just walk out to that bitch and maybe get a detention. Like there was something fearful about, you know, you didn't skip school in middle school. You don't ever fucking just ditch school. In high school, it was just like, yo, you guys want to leave? And we could just, you know, I don't know why that fear went away. Maybe because the disciplinary part of it wasn't shit.
You just got older and you're like, you just go through that phase, you know?
Yeah.
Your rebellious phase.
And so I just fucking freshman year, I convinced the school to let me do the work program, even though I wasn't old enough for the work program. So I had the work program hours. So I'd go to school at 8 and get out at 12:30. And
got
like,
it.
You can, they're like, you can do that this year. But then sophomore, junior, and senior year, you have to go the full days and you have to pass every class in order to actually graduate on time. I'm like, fuck yeah, I got this. I didn't pass any class in my freshman year. Sophomore year, I was like, yo, I'm like, I want to do that shit again. They were like, there's not a chance. And like, and you got to do summer school. And I think it was within 3 months I was fucking expelled. And I was like 15 sophomore year. Out of this, what is it? 20 days in a month that you actually go to school because you have weekends. I think I missed like 31.
Oh,
so it was
wow.
Like half the fucking time. And I was just done, dude. I was just fucking, I remember my old man, he's all like, what are you going to do? What do you want to do? And it was right when we were starting the band. And I was like, I want to play music. And he's like, well, if you want to play music, then you have to do it. You know, like you have to. And I was like, all right. And I remember when I was 16, I asked him, I was like, yo, I want to, like, I lived in Chicago. So the thing is like, move out to California, you know, like that's where all the record label guys are and shit, all that. And I was like, I think I want to take the band out to California. And I was 16 and he was like, all right. He's like, if you want to do it, you got to be prepared to like get your shit together. And he was all for it because he wanted to do it as a kid, you know. And then he ended up being a machinist and working a normal job, so it was like, why would he tell me not to do it, so to speak? But never ended up having to come to California. Just pretty much, you know, made our scene in Chicago and got noticed there and everything. But yeah, man, I definitely with the kids, it's like I'm gonna push the proper, you know, like I don't even know if they don't know I graduated. They might not know that I didn't graduate yet, but certain things we try to hide from the kids as long as we can, you know.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I was just asking because when I was growing up, my mother, she had 8 brothers and sisters and only one graduated. And so, you know, I was from Kansas City, so for us graduating, that was a big deal. And so I was just kind of like, wanted to do that for my mom because it was like, you know what I mean? And so here I am with my kids and I'm telling my daughter, hang on. I know you don't want to be in school, but you got like 6-7 months and then you're like out. You know what I mean? So just handle it. Just get through it. You know what I mean? Cause in high school too, it gets really restless. You know, you get, you know, it's like a holding pattern kind of like, you're not legal enough to be on your own, but you're kind of like, well, what more am I going to learn here that I'm going to, you know what
right.
I mean? Depending on what you want to do in life. And I'm not saying I'm not saying ditch school or leave school. Anybody listen, don't get it twisted. Everybody's different. But I just want to focus on that because I feel like you're going to do better, not better, but you know what I mean? Push your kids, but you got to also let your kids be who they're going to be. It sounds like your dad just supported you regardless.
Yeah. My parents were fucking always supportive with everything I did. I mean, my parents were supportive to the point of like, I think the first time I was brought home in a cop car, I was like, 8 or 9. And like my grandpa came out of the house and just went off on the police officer, like, what the fuck is my grandson doing in your car? You know, like cops would chase me to the back door. And I knew if I got inside my house, they couldn't touch me. Remember, we had this one cop named Walrus chased me down the tracks up around my house. I got inside, I fucking shut that screen door and I was like, fuck you, motherfucker. I remember I was like 15, 16 years old. My dad comes walking around the kitchen and sees fucking Walrus standing at our back door. My dad's like, get the fuck out of my yard. You know, like they supported everything. We didn't like cops in my neighborhood. We had a pretty bad relationship. We're cool with them now, but back in the day, it wasn't
right.
Good.
Were you from, was the neighborhood kind of like, what type of neighborhood was it? Was it like a working class neighborhood? Was it, you
What's
know?
What's that show? Fuck, there's a show on, is it Showtime? That's based on the south side of Chicago.
Not
and,
sure.
uh, Oh fuck, Dr. Cohen.
You still taking those pills?
Gotta keep that brain straight, bro. I'm trying to think of what the fuck. My wife.
I don't know it, but I'm sure our listeners probably do.
Anyway, so it's based on like South Side of Chicago, and that's very much like based on Blue Island, where I grew up. Blue Island was established before Chicago.
Blue Island was established before.
Yeah, Blue Island was established before Chicago, even. And it's
what's the population of that city? Is it super small?
40,000, maybe something like that.
But back then, it was probably half of that, huh?
Well, it stayed pretty much the same. It's never like, you know, it is what it is. Like it was populated, and that's as many as we could probably fit in this motherfucker.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, it's a generational, town where you know the last names of families that grew up, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like Gary Sinise, you know, Lieutenant Dan.
Yeah, yeah. Is he from there?
Yeah, he's my cousin.
He is?
Yeah, real life cousin. Yeah.
Wait, no way. Wait, and is Demi your cousin too?
Nah, there's rumors, but I doubt
look,
it.
I looked that up online, bro.
Somebody sent me some shit and said that we were.
It says Tony Lovato is a cousin of pop star Demi Lovato.
I mean, that's as simple as somebody looking at a last name and writing some shit on the interweb.
Yeah. So. I was going to say, if you guys were, you know, like, I don't know if she's into bike riders and shit, but I was going to maybe put a good word in for me or something. You know what I'm saying, Tony? I got this split personality. I mean, called Tony. It's Tony. But it's not you. It's like,
I've seen it before.
Yeah, shit. So Tony, hook it up, Tony. You know what I'm saying?
It happens when you're driving sometimes.
All the time, road rage.
That's actually the angry one though. When you fucking, when you see cars without the driver, without the license on.
That's when you. That's because you get delusional in LA traffic because you're always in your freaking car. Okay, anybody that wants to move to LA, get ready if you want to because you're gonna be in your car all the time.
I avoid it as much as possible, man. I fucking hate it.
Man, no, LA is crazy. So Gary is your cousin.
Yeah.
Wow. So do you like? Do you like? Have you talk to him and stuff?
Never. Guys? Nope. Nothing like that. I know we're fucking related on my mom's side. It's like third cousin or some shit. Like his cousin, his grandfather was my great grandfather's cousin, some shit. Something like that. I don't know. I got like old family photos and shit.
I knew he was probably like a Midwest kind of like dude because he's all about the veterans and stuff, I think, right? Doesn't he do a lot
with
the veterans?
Yeah, he does better stuff. He's in that band and shit, the Lieutenant Dan band and stuff. And
yeah,
I mean, I don't, dude, he's my cousin. That's all I know is we're related.
Wait, we're talking about the same dude from Forrest Gump, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I'm just making sure. Sinise.
Yeah.
Not Gary Busey.
No, not Gary Busey.
Oh, okay. Just making sure. Hey, so let's talk about your music, dude. Okay, you're coming out of Chicago. You're from a little town. You decided school wasn't your thing. You want to start a band. You got to be confident as all hell to do that. You got to like be like, okay, how are we going to do this? Because this is probably years before what the internet is now, right?
Yeah.
And how things. So what was that like starting that with that kind of like confidence of going, I'm going to do this?
I mean,
music, because it takes always a strong person to do that. You know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, when you're like really pursuing it. But see, to me, it was always just like a hobby. It was supposed to be fun. And
right.
I mean, the first band I was in, I was 7 years old. It was me, my brother, and my cousin. And because we had basements in the Midwest, you know this, like,
yeah,
we grew up with basements.
Because of them tornadoes, so, man.
Yeah. And so we had like drum sets and amps and guitars in our basement because my dad was a musician. So from a young age on, we would just go down there and fuck around. And then we got our own instruments, started our own band, and we would like try to play like Judas Priest covers and Rolling Stone covers and just shit like that. Like that my dad sort of raised us on, you know, that was around the house. We did it absolutely terribly, undoubtedly. I could not play the guitar. I played it like a bass, like single note, you know, but I was fucking 7 and trying to sing at the same time. And we did like one concert for the neighborhood where we invited all the kids inside, charged them a quarter each.
No, did you?
Swear to God, yeah.
How many kids showed up, you think? Would you make $5 or some shit?
There's like maybe like 8 kids there.
So what, you made $2?
Yeah. Yeah. We split it 3 ways, and then my dad took 20%. My mom took 15%. You know what I mean? They were getting us ready for the music business.
Did you guys sell any merch?
No, we didn't have any merch yet.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Which then Live Nation would have taken like 20%. You know what I mean?
So, oh, they were getting ready for the music.
Yeah.
Give me 20%, son, with that $2.
Yeah, getting you ready for the big leagues.
Yeah, right.
So then we had the kids write notes to give us like, you know, like write down your thoughts so we could like improve. And like every single note just said that I couldn't sing. So I was like, there goes that. And then no joke, I switched over to the drums after that. I was like, fuck this. So I went and learned how to play the drums. And I did that for a couple of years.
They were just hating on you, bro. That's what happens when you're good at something. People say,
They saw a fucking, they saw a shining star and they didn't know what to do.
And they're like, no, they can't handle this. He can't be a star as well. That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So you suck, dude.
Not in our neighborhood, bro. But yeah, so I always played in bands growing up. We did like the alternative bands and rock bands and covers and shit like that. Bounced around on instruments. But then, yeah, we started it just to have fun.
Right.
It was just another band because we were always having bands. There was a pretty cool scene happening in Chicago at the time, with like pop punk and ska and shit like that.
What year was this? Sorry to cut you off. What year?
We started the band in 95.
Okay. All right.
October 95. So we're
got
pretty
it.
Fucking old. Band's pretty old. I'm pretty old. But yeah, so started in 95, and that's when, like, you know, fuck, man, you think about like what was those 3 records that came out in 94, which was like I think it was Rancid, Let's Go, came out in 94, maybe 93 even. Dookie came out, yep. No Effects is what's the record called? Linoleum or some shit, right? That's the song that's on it.
And that year it was like Green Day and The Offspring were like on the radio, pretty
yeah.
Sure. Those are like punk. What's this punk stuff? It's like it was new to the mainstream.
But right, and then
that's the same year the X Games was out. First year for Warped Tour. So it was like that year was like
was 95 the first year, right?
Yeah, 95 was like first year.
Small.
95 was first year for Warped Tour and the X Games.
But it wasn't Vans Warped Tour, right? 96 turned into Vans Warped Tour.
Yeah, I think in the early days, I think it was just Vans had sponsored it, but I think they didn't. I could be wrong, but I don't think that they own it now, but I don't think that they owned it back then. I think they were just the title sponsor.
I got a fun fact about that, but that's a Caballero story that he shouldn't. I don't know if he wants to. Vans Warped Tour is Vans Warped Tour because of Caballero, but I can tell you that story off the air, which is pretty rad story that Cab told me.
Oh yeah, he told me the same thing. I know that story. Yeah,
that's fucking, yeah, that's pretty rad.
That's pretty rad. Yeah, absolutely. Because well, he's a musician too, so he saw this, like, you know, wanted to collab it. You know.
Yeah.
So and right. So, anyways, back to your band. Back to okay. So it's 1995. You've been beating on the drums. You're like, I'm gonna sing now. Let's do this band.
Yeah, so I switched over. Fucking got kicked out of school right around that time, which was October 95.
Got it.
So I picked up the guitar again, decided that's what I was going to do, was play guitar, sing, and write songs. And just started doing it. And we started writing songs. It was me and my brother, my cousin, and our drummer, Nick, at the time. And we just fucking started writing songs, demoing. And then I think, like, there's like a little local battle of the bands in the neighborhood. We played that. We won that. And then there was a little venue on the south side in a town called Homewood called Off the Alley. And that was like the punk rock little fucking rad club. Fireside Bowl on the north side. And then we'd rent like VFW halls and put on shows ourselves. And like I said, like there was a handful of bands, you know, at the time that were like decent enough to constantly put on shows, and like kids would show up, and we were, you know, we're 15, 16 years old, 17. And it was just fun, dude. It was like, you know, we were sort of like the punk rock bad kids, so to speak. Cause like my dad would let us use his truck, and we'd put up all of our equipment in the truck, in the back of it. But underneath in the middle was a keg. So we would be the bands that would sneak off and fucking, you know, always be constantly going outside, drinking in the alley and shit. Like, and so we got a reputation for that type of shit. I mean, the band name is Messed, which is literally, you take the M from Milwaukee, put it over the B, Milwaukee's best beer. That's how we got our band. So, you know, we were fucking...
Is that how you got the name, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, so, wow. I never knew that. All right. Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, so we just started doing the local thing. Immediately, like, once we had a handful of songs, I think my dad probably gave us a couple $100. We went into a studio, recorded our first cassette demo, and then from
cassette.
Yeah, actually, you know what? Look at this. This isn't on purpose, but
no, I want it to be on purpose. Let me see this.
Fucking, let's see if I have the
Wow, I haven't seen one of those in a long ass time.
Look at this
time.
Shit.
Look I'll at that. What?
Hold on, I'll show you what we did back in the day.
Those cassettes are dope, dude. I used to have, man, any kids out there, cassettes were like the bomb.
So this is what we did back in the day, which I still have. Actually, I still produce them because people, it's like a collector's item.
Yeah, they kind of made a little comeback.
This is our cover thing. We had to figure it out. So I cut it out, fold it up, baby, and then you fucking put it in here, and it's your fucking jacket for the thing. Still make them and sell them on our merch page.
Oh, wow. That's cool. DIY edits. I love it. I love it, man.
Yeah.
That's cool. That's got to be cool for your fans to get. That's pretty unique.
Yeah, that's
cool.
Why I reproduce them, because I'm like, you know, it's like, it's the first fucking songs we recorded and shit, you know, like, and they're not terrible. They're not obviously the best, but they're not, for being 16 years old, I could, you know, it shows I think the potential of what the band was doing. But after
Absolutely.
That, then we went back in the studio, and we kept recording like a bunch of demos here and there. And finally we compiled like 17 songs and burnt our first CD, and put that out and just started hustling in Chicago. And I came up with a plan where there's like that concept of like, try to expose yourself as much as you can, play as much as you can, get in front of as many people as you can. And I took a different approach where I was like, I feel like, and this even applies to now touring now in a professional band consistently, of oversaturating a market. And I was even thinking that shit back then, where I'm like, dude, we're just in Chicago here, and there's only so many towns around us that we could play, and it could be eventful. But if we're playing every weekend and we're pushing shit every weekend, it's just, well, I'll see him next weekend. It doesn't become a thing. So once we got to a certain status of a band where people knew who we had put music out, I sort of took the approach to the band where I said, hey, why don't we just fucking chill, find a show maybe every 2 weeks or once a month that is an event, so we can get all of our people to come out and see us at least once a month, so that no matter where we're going, it's showing something. Instead of just being the band that's on every fucking bill every weekend in every place. And because then you become that band that's like, people want to go see.
Yeah, so you're not oversaturating yourself, I guess, right?
Right.
Is that something?
And yeah, I mean, So in the very beginning, obviously, I say play a lot, play, you know, as much as you can. Cause you have, but you have, but we were at a point where we had been a band for a couple of years and released a couple of things. And we got to the point where we were the band that would open up for the national touring bands. I was working at UPS at the time. I met a guy that worked there that worked at the Metro in Chicago. He helped me get on a couple of shows. And then they saw that we were worthy of being that band anyways. So whenever bands were coming through and needed a local band to bring, you know, 100, 200 kids, we could do that. But that gave us that status. So it was like a slow build of, you know, where you are on the fucking totem pole.
Exactly.
So when we got to that status, it was that, and then me just going to every show. And I don't know, like, kids and fan band members definitely do this now, and I experienced it when I was on the road. And I don't know if I it was like sort of because I always did that, and then people heard our story. But like giving CDs to every band member I ever met, and just like pushing the band on other bands. That was like my thing when I was like 15, 16 years old. I'd be flyering our shows. I would always make very, very inappropriate flyers too. And to the point that one time that we were doing a Q101 show, which is the K Rock of Chicago, I guess you'd say. And we were doing a Q101 sponsored show. And so I made these gnarly flyers. You know, I was like, fuck, how old is that? I was probably like 17 years old. And I found this photo of this like three old dudes sucking each other off, and like old dudes. So I put little stars over the cocks so that, you know, at least you couldn't see the dicks. Well, that actually, I think the first one I did, I didn't do anything to it, but I would put the band names right above the dudes, like masked. And I think it was like Show Off at the time, and came with the other band. And you're like, you can't do that. And so then I was like, well, perfect. Then I'll put a star over the cock sucking part, but you can still see what was happening. And they were like this dude, James Van Oslo, who was a DJ at the time, he called me up and he's like, dude, he's like, I saw the flyers. He's like, still, he's like, you still can't be passing those out to people and shit. But you know, he was always just like fucking around and you
But you're
know.
trying, yeah, I understand what you're doing. You're like just, you're shocking them and you're like, oh, what's this
Somebody's gonna,
band? Yeah, I
right.
got
You're
you.
gonna
I
look at
got
that
you.
flyer and remember that name, if anything, or it's getting like, what the fuck is this? And you know, as opposed to just getting a flyer and it's, you know.
Well, that's kind of like the old black, I mean, you know, similar, but it's the same concept of like, think about when you look at all those like old, like black flag flyers, you know what I mean? You're like, what is going on these flyers? You know what I mean?
I'd have to see your references to understand this. Was there cock sucking going on
No,
in the thing
not
too?
that. It wasn't a sexual thing. It was more kind of like a, you know, just dark. It was dark, so it made you
Shocking
kind of,
shit.
yeah, just it was violent. We would say not violent, but you know what I mean? It just made you think like, what is this band? And you know,
Right.
that's why they're,
Grabs the interest, which is.
yeah. I mean, that's why they're Black Flag. But so you built it, and it was different, you know, back then. But it was also too a lot about like word of mouth and networking. And so when a band comes through that you're opening up for, obviously you want to like say, hey man, take it serious for more gigs, right? So
Yeah.
it's like a street hustle, like you're out on the street just trying to you promote your stuff. No one's helping you. When did you get to that point where you're like, okay, we've been opening up for these bands, that you know, headliners that come through, and now we're going to the next level, like from there even. So where then you said, okay, when did you do, because I met you on Warped Tour, but did you tour around a lot before Warped Tour, or was that
Yeah,
like
I
your
mean, because we
first?
met in, fuck, we probably met in 02 on Warped Tour.
Something like that. I remember, you know, what's funny is we met on stage, and I was with me, you, and Benji from Good Charlotte. I remember this. And I was like, I'm going to stage dive. And I go, you guys going to stage dive? And you guys are like, yeah, we can stage dive. And then I forgot who was playing, and I ran and stage dive, and I turned around, and you guys were just still standing there. And I was like, these mother, you guys didn't jump with me.
I jumped,
You
and
did?
we were told not to do it too. I don't know if it was
Oh, you
Brian
did
or who.
jump? Then it was
Yeah,
Benji that didn't jump.
it was Benji that didn't jump. I think it was
Mother.
I don't know if it was Teal or if it was Brian that was.
Oh, that's right. You did jump. That's right. You did. Okay, my bad. It
One
was
of them
Benji
didn't
that didn't
want us.
jump.
Yeah, one of them didn't want us going, and I think we went anyways. But
Oh, my God.
that was 02. We weren't on that. I think I was went to that show just to hang with everybody. And 03 was when we first did it.
Right.
And I think maybe the first time we actually met was the fucking Boom Boom Huck Jam. I
Oh,
think
that's right. Yeah, I
I was at one
remember.
of those hanging out with the boys, and you were there. But yeah, so we started, it was around 90 fucking eight maybe.
Right. I'm listening
And
to you. Yep, keep going. Sorry.
Gabe some music to Feldy from Goldfinger. He just started producing bands.
So
I didn't know that.
did he come through Chicago?
Yeah, he came through Chicago, and they did a surprise show at Fireside Bowl, which is the little 300 bowling alley capacity place. After the show, I was just like, "Yo, dude," I'm like, "You said last next time you guys were in town that we could open up for you guys. You guys are here." I go, "What do I have to do to open up for you next time after this?" Because he's like, "Oh, sorry, man." He was working with the band that was opening up for him at the time, anyways, a friend of mine, who was included in that flyer of the old guys sucking each other off. Because they were a local band that we had been playing shows with all the time, for years. But anyway, so he was like, "Here, dude," grabs a fucking pen and paper and writes down his home phone number and goes, "Keep in touch with me." I'm like, "Okay." So it was his real home phone number. So we kept in touch. We opened up for them, maybe 6 months to a year later or so. And we had obviously grown within a year of that time too.
Right.
And I recall him after the show being like, "Dude, that was really good." He was like, "You guys got a lot of fans here, huh?" And it was rad. Like, we were playing our songs and, like, it was a sold out 1700 house of 1700 people house of blues. But when the fans were singing our, when we were a local band at times though, right? So, like, but the crowd singing our words was loud as fuck in this massive place, where I was even like, "Whoa, dude, like, this is cool." Like,
Yeah, that feeling
everybody,
of
like,
like, let's go.
yeah,
Yeah.
like, so I think John saw that, and that's, you want to see it in one market first before you're like, "Will this work in other markets?" Obviously, right? If you can build a community and a fan base in your hometown, that shows that you can then, this will work everywhere else. But you got to do at least in one spot. And we did it in Chicago, and John saw that. He asked me to keep sending him new songs. I sent him demos anytime we'd record shit. That was another thing I told the band. I'm like, "Hey, we got to relax on playing live. Let's start writing fucking songs. This dude who fucking signs bands and produces bands wants music." I go, "So we should just be consistently writing songs, because he's gonna take he, if we want to go to the next step on the fucking totem pole, it's a record deal. It's a fucking
Yeah,
it's getting
exactly.
produced by, And the guys were always like, "No, we should just keep playing, like, nobody ever wanted to follow the lead." And thankfully, I was just like, "Well, this is what we're doing." So kept writing songs. Eventually got the phone call from him, like, 3 in the morning at my girlfriend's house. Her mom's like, "Hey, there's some old guy, John, on the phone for you." And I'm like, "All right." It's like 3 in the morning in Chicago. I don't think he realized the time difference. And he's all, "Hey, man, you still got that band?" And I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "All right, in a couple months," he's like, "I'm gonna have some time." He's like, "I'll get you guys out here and we'll do a demo for Maverick." He's like, I'll secure a demo
Awesome.
deal."
Well, for Maverick, what? Sick.
Yeah. So I was like, I'm like, "All right, cool, man." Like, it was just random because it wasn't set up yet. But he was like, "In a couple months, I'll get you guys a demo deal and we'll fly you guys out here." I'm like, "Okay, another couple months." I'm like, it's the hurry up and wait game. So
Yeah,
I think I
yeah.
probably told that to the dudes too. And they probably were still like, "Yeah, it's not gonna happen." Like, they were pretty fucking negative Nancy about everything. But
Well, I mean, sometimes it could be that way, bro. It takes one person to have the vision, right? Other people just, you know.
for sure, there's definitely, I think in most bands, there's always one sort of leader that sort of steers the fucking ship,
Yeah,
but yes.
absolutely. Absolutely.
So, long
That's funny though. He
story.
probably called you before cell phones, so he called you on a home phone.
Yeah, no, that's why my girlfriend's mom
Ah,
answered,
that's awesome.
and was like 2 in the morning, and she's like, "Why the fuck is our phone ringing?"
That's
And we're like
awesome.
sitting in a little TV room downstairs, and she's like, "Hey, Tony, there's a guy John on the phone for you." And I'm like, "The fuck?" I'm like, "What's up, dude?" And he's like, "Hey, you still got that band?" And I'm like, "Yeah, dude, but why 2 in the morning and why my girlfriend's
Yeah,
house?"
you're cringling and shit. What's going
Yeah.
on?
But so eventually the 4 months came. We flew out to California. I remember, John Reese, obviously.
Oh, yeah,
John
absolutely. Absolutely.
Reese picks us up from the airport. Actually, we missed our first flight because we had a party the night before, got hammered, woke up in the morning, missed our flight. Which just shows the ungratefulness of, like, you're on the brink of, like, doing something, and like, but you're still, I'm 19 years old, so, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
Like,
I get it. I get it. Yeah.
you fuck up. But anyways, we made our way out to California. We recorded 4 songs, got sent back home. Got a call about a week later, and they're like, "All right, yeah, we're gonna do a record." And I was like, "All right, cool, man." Like, it's not
That's
the typical way.
badass though.
Yeah,
That's
not the
badass.
typical way that bands get signed by any means. You know what I mean? Like, normally it's like, especially if you live out in LA, you're playing in fucking shows constantly because everybody gets to see you. So eventually you're gonna play in front of every agent, every fucking label. And this is back when labels actually signed bands by
And
looking
they
at their
actually
live
went and
show.
looked at bands and they just didn't see them
Right.
online and shit like that. Yeah, I get
Right.
it.
And didn't have like a manager booking agent connection because then now that's all it is now.
It is. But what's weird about LA musically and like and with comedy and almost a lot of things is like there's so many people out here. It's the shows aren't as good, not from the performer's place, but from the crowd. They don't come out. You know, it's hard to get
Because there's
people.
always something going on.
Yeah, I know some comedians, they'll do these rooms and they're like, they can't, not that they can't, but they might not sell out a 250-seater room. But then you see them on Instagram and they like sold out a 15,000 arena, like in the middle of like Utah or something. So it's like, you know, it's LA is a weird place for that because it's like, I don't think everybody's trying to be into music. I think there's just so much going on and everything's spread out and there's so much traffic. It's hard. I think it's when you're in a smaller town because, you know, I'm from Kansas City. So learning how to ride bikes in Kansas City, I felt like would have been better than me trying to learn to ride out here. I have too many
For sure.
distractions. There you can like focus and get it jam, you know, get it dialed. And you know what I'm saying? Like it's
Yeah.
just different.
Well, I
So
think
probably
that
with
kind
music, you were able to
of
build that fan base.
for
Not to say that
sure.
you couldn't do it back then in LA. Back then you probably could, but nowadays in LA, it's weird. You know, where are there even places to play? I'm scratching my head. You live out
Yeah.
here. You live out here. You get it. You know
Yeah.
what I'm
I
saying?
think that it's changed too, though. I think that there was a real thing in the 70s, 80s, maybe even early 90s where because you could be seen here. Now you can be seen because the internet, you can be seen anywhere.
Anywhere.
So there was that excitement of coming out to LA and doing that, and you hear the stories and shit, you know. But yeah, I think that now it's just a different world we live in, like you said, and it is a little oversaturated with everything, and I don't know, like it's just
Well, the
everything always
rules,
evolves.
yeah, the rules of the game change, but it doesn't mean you can't keep doing it. I mean, I see that a lot in comedy too. Like, I think with comedy, to get known as a comedian back in the day is you had to be grinded in the clubs, which you do. You had to be out and you had to be doing your thing. You had to be doing shows all the time. But nowadays with the internet, it's like people do skits and they got 20 million followers and they're not grinding in the clubs. You know what I mean? Building their name as a comic because the platform just changed. That's all.
But it's true though,
I
does
think it's good. I
it?
think it's good though, in a way, to use the internet in a way to build your brand and who you are. And you can reach people. If people like you, they're gonna attach themselves to that, you know?
But it doesn't always translate to the live show, like you said. It doesn't always
Of
do
course
that.
not. Of course not. It doesn't at
That's the
all. Yeah,
thing.
it doesn't at all. Seeing a band
Yeah.
live is way better than seeing them on like YouTube. You know what I mean? Of
Right.
course. Like,
But I mean,
come
like, it
on.
doesn't mean just because they have, like, I mean, I look at bands and I'm like, fuck, they got like fucking way more followers than Mast does. I'm like, but you know what? Like, one, we never bought fucking followers. We don't do that type of shit. So like everybody that follows our page, they're legit fans. So it's like
Absolutely.
those numbers may be smaller, but it trends. But for us, that those people are there when we're playing, and it's not
Exactly.
always like that with other bands, you know. So you know, it's part of the, like I said, everything is, it's a different fucking state of
Well, everything nowadays, I think,
business.
yeah, it's a lot of it's pay to play, obviously. I mean, you know, with the social media and promoting your brand and what you do, it's like pay to play promoting a clothing brand. You need to advertise yourself. And sometimes, you know, as we all know, your algorithms, you may have like even people that have a million followers, they still are in an algorithm as well.
Oh, I know, it's crazy.
So, you know, people, unless you have like multi-million followers, it's difficult to like, you know, because it's oversaturated. So this opportunity, you know, whatever, we all get it. It's pay to play basically.
Yeah.
But that's okay. It doesn't mean you got to stop doing what you're doing. It doesn't mean that you can't be successful. If you're good, you're good, period. You're right.
Right.
And you guys were good enough, and you still are, to get that at that level. Because I know from being from the Midwest, Kansas City was a little bit different than Chicago. Chicago had more of a, not more of a musical, but like there was more bands that came out there. You had the whole Wax Trax and all that kind of stuff. And then you had
Yeah.
one of my favorite bands of all time to this day is from Chicago. You might know them. They're called Peg Boy.
Yeah.
And those guys were amazing. So Chicago kind of had its own little thing going on. You know what I'm saying? Its own little,
Yeah, I
thing.
mean, Peg Boy, Naked Ray Gun, Smoking Popes, like,
That's it. Yep. Those guys too. Yeah.
and then like Alkaline Trio is sort of like, I think the came
Yep.
from that, you know what I mean? Like that
Yep.
there definitely is a Chicago
And you
sound.
guys, and like, there's just, it just had a more of a musical thing going on. But I just think it's rad that you came from a small town and made it all the way to California to Maverick to get a deal. That's sick. Back when there was no internet. And I don't think kids really realize how much more challenging that is
For
than it
sure.
is nowadays. It's that's a whole nother mission. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, yeah, now you got nowadays, like I said, I'm not going to dive into it too much, but there are like
Yeah.
TikTok stars that can get signed by
Yeah.
dudes and bands and, you know, put out a record that three other kids that were in pop punk bands in the early 3000 or 2000s can write a record for them. And then now he's playing pop punk, you know,
Yeah.
and
It's
wearing
just a
Descendants
numbers game.
shirts for sure. And that's the where you get into those numbers things where it's like, well, he's got fucking 2 million followers on TikTok. We could fucking, he could probably put out a record and sell some records. It's like, yeah, but why do that to the kids? Let there's other kids in a garage somewhere writing pop punk songs. Let fucking that band influence the next generation. You know, like why have a bunch of people write songs for some TikTok kid? Like, what the fuck's the point of that? You know.
Yeah.
Anyways, so we're moving on from that.
Yeah, we are. We are. But that's a rad story. I never knew that. I never knew how you guys had, how you had reached where you're at, because I just met you on Warped Tour, and so
Yeah.
or Huck Jam, maybe Huck Jam, but then I saw your Warped Tour and I was like, and so then I see you as a band. Did you do Warped Tour when you're in a wheelchair?
2003.
You did, right?
Yeah.
What happened with that?
2003.
Why were you in a wheelchair? What happened?
We were, that was 03, we were main stage that whole fucking run.
I remember that. I remember
I had
that.
a surgery on, I had a herniated disc and I couldn't opt for like physical therapy because time wise Warped Tour was coming up. I was just coming back from Japan and doing press over in Japan for like 3 days. And so they were like, well, your option is to do surgery. And I was in a lot of pain, a pain I didn't know before. Like there was the sciatic shit I'd never felt. And I was 22 years old. So they're like, yeah, just go have the surgery. So I went and had the surgery. And then first, I was maybe like 2 weeks post-surgery, which you're supposed to take about like 3 months minimum, I think, to like be good before you start fucking around. I think I was 2 weeks out and Warped Tour started. First show, just jumped around like an idiot. Woke up that morning on my birthday, June 20th, turning 23 on Warped Tour, second day of Warped Tour, in tears, in so much pain. Like the fucking scar on my back, where it was cut, swelled up. So I had like a half a dick coming out of my back, like a sausage style fucking down my spine. And I had to play that show. I wore fucking sunglasses because I was like in tears and that much pain. But I'm like, I gotta play the show. And then, yeah, I just got to the point where like I couldn't walk a lot. What happened? What was technically happening was a staph infection was slowly getting into my spine over the next 3 months. So I was in and out of the hospital 4 times. Couple ODs on the medication, like not like fun ODs. It was like I wasn't eating because I was in pain. So I was
Right.
taking all these different medications they were giving me, and my body was just like one day just was like, okay, this isn't working. So like with like the steroids they were giving me, and then the fucking naproxen and Vicodin and all this shit, and then I'm chugging beer because all I was wanting to do is drink because I'm in so much pain. One OD on tour, but it wasn't like anything cool. But did survive, obviously. In and out of the hospital 4 times. And the fourth one, Lyman, we were going into Canada. Lyman's like, all right, dude, you're done. 7 shows left. Go get fixed. Like, this is your fourth time in the hospital. And he's like, you can make up the shows next year or 2 years from now. We'll get everything sorted out. I didn't want to fucking do it. But they kept me in the hospital, flew me home, had emergency surgery August 3rd. Warped Tour ended August 10th. Doctor told me, he goes, yeah, it was bad, dude. He's like, staph infection was in your fucking
Wow,
in your
gnarly.
disc, entered your spine, pretty much. He's like, you had about 7 days left to live.
Whoa,
So
gnarly.
Kevin Lyman saved my life by kicking me off
Yeah,
Warped Tour.
dude, how rad is that guy? He's the best.
He is. He's a good dude.
That's a
But
crazy story, man. That's awesome. That's awesome, but it's crazy.
yeah, so like that's what sucks is like that was my dream to do Warped Tour, right? And like that was how I got to do Warped Tour was fucked up on pills and in a wheelchair
Did you do it after
singing.
that, though?
We did some in 05 and then a couple shows in 2013, and then I think 2017 we were the special guest in Chicago. I think it was the second to last year or whatever. But never like that, like where I wanted to do the full fucking run. But you know, the dream tour was like the nightmare at the same time. But
yeah, I get it.
Is what it is.
You got to roll with the punches, though, bro. It's sick though that you were like, you know, going for it, because most people, you gotta chase it, bro. I'm from that world where you got a broken rib, you're like, all right, keep it moving. You know?
Yeah, I mean, a third record had just come out, so I was like, I can't miss this opportunity to play in front of these people. So like, did what I had to do, you know.
Yeah,
it's good though.
That's awesome, dude. I it's been awesome talking to you, bro. I just want to cover a couple more things.
For sure.
You got new music, right?
We have a new record, eighth studio record. Babe, can you shut that door?
It's your eighth?
Eighth studio record.
Awesome.
Finished it a year ago. We filmed the video together about a year ago.
Right.
That's still unreleased. but
you got to release, when you release it, I'm going to help promote this thing because it's sick.
Yeah. It's getting close. the reason we haven't yet is we did a record in 2020. I toured a shit ton in 2019. Record came out January 2020, our last record. World shut down. It fucked us. So I'm like, all right. I really recorded what I consider, and everybody I've showed it to, our best record yet. Like, best friend back at home that grew up with us was like, this is it. This is your best record. I'm like, all right, cool. So just trying to put all the ducks in a row, because I still am very DIY with this shit. Fortunately, we signed with a label in Japan who's going to help us release it in Japan. We're working with Spam Records over in Europe. So we're covering a couple different countries and areas. Got to figure out what we're doing in the States. I might be doing it again myself and hiring companies. But putting all the ducks in a row, because there's no point in fucking shitting out a record and then that's it. You know what I mean? Like, this is, you know,
yeah.
Like I said, it's the eighth record. So like, there's enough catalog for people to listen to mess music, but we're reaching that point now where they're almost all in a row here. So once that happens, we already have like two videos done. It's 12 songs on the record. It's our fucking best record. I mean, I'm stoked. Like, I just don't want to waste it is the thing. So it's like,
absolutely. You know, absolutely.
Yeah. And we did a good amount of touring this past year, like over 50 shows, and Shay went to Japan also. So just trying to make sure that I do, because I self-manage and, you know, do all this shit myself. It's like, and then fucking five kids, you know, you got to like allocate
finding
time
that balance.
Properly.
Yeah. Finding that balance, bro, for sure.
So just getting everything ready properly, figuring out the best ways to do this. Like, because the music business is forever fucking changing. So, you know, just making sure that we got everything in the right places before we shit out the record.
Yeah, dude. And you guys, do you got management with someone I saw? What is it? Spam? What is it? S? How do you say it?
Spam is
Spam. Spam.
They're a label over in Europe that are gonna help us release over in some of the countries over there.
Yeah, I did their documentary. I was in their documentary that's coming out. And then they do their festival and stuff, right? They do their event.
We're doing that next year.
And you got the Havasu thing coming up, right?
Yeah, Cab's band is playing that too. Like, I mean, London was.
I played that thing like 15 years ago with the Voodoo Glow Skulls, I think.
Yeah, well, what's it?
Not that long ago, Voodoo, maybe 10 years ago or something.
Yeah, I don't. It wasn't the same thing though, right? It was just a show out there, because
I don't know.
Their second annual one. The singer of Voodoo used to have like a little club out there back in.
No, it's not the same thing, but it's in the same area. It was a different name. It was called River something. I can't think.
I mean, there's only so many areas in Havasu anyways.
That's true. Yeah, I saw you guys playing with Cavs band, which is dope. So you think that, you know, there's a lot of buzz about pop punk as far as like, you know, with the When We Were Young festival and like just the vibe. But like, do you see yourself, do you think that that's going to come back around and be like a thing again to tour with like that style of music?
I mean,
and I don't mean that in a mean way, because I know that the fans are loyal and people love this style of music. I'm just saying, like, you know, do you see like a Warped Tour vibe coming back? That's where I'm going with it.
I don't know if we'll ever see I don't think we'll ever see a festival full run across the States of any style of punk, pop punk, just because I don't know. I don't see that forever happening.
Well, no one's doing that though. Isn't it all just festivals,
it's all just weekend festivals and shit like that, which is cool. I mean, I definitely undoubtedly there's been a little bit of a revival. Not a fucking, I would say it's a generational cycle thing, right?
People seem more psyched on the style of music than they were 5 years ago.
There's younger bands doing it. There's another generation of bands doing their version of pop punk and punk, which is helping the older bands who are, you know, at least hopefully they're looking into the bands and influence them the same way I did when I learned about bands that I liked. I went and found out what bands influenced them, learned about those bands. Hopefully the kids are doing that again. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, there seems to be a thing too, and I would say this, where a music will hit its peak and there'll be a lull because that age demographic hits a certain point in their life. Where it's college, starting families, working again. And then after they get that part established, then it's like, oh yeah, I still want to go out and have fun and do things. And I've got some money in the bank now. I can go have fun again. And then that's usually when that age range reaches a certain part in their life again. Then those bands get to pick up again. And I feel like that's a little bit of what is happening here with this. People call it emo, but I mean, how many of those bands are actually pop punk, punk bands, you know? But call it what you want.
Dude, I'll tell you right now, Rites of Spring was emo.
Yeah.
Embrace, DC Movement, Ian McKay, all
right.
You know, it's like this, people just want to title things. And so.
Right. You got to give it a name. I get it.
So they identify with it. But where can somebody find you? Instagram and then Mess, if you want to drop that. Sort of, we
get you some my followers. Instagram is Anthony Lovato. Spelled just like Demi's last name.
Yeah, I wish you were related to Demi, dude. You just ruined this whole interview.
I'll look into it. I probably got friends who know her.
Just network, bro. I got you. You know what I mean? I'm just saying. Anyways, so
DM
back to you
her right now. I'll DM
okay,
her.
All right. So your Instagram again is
mine's Anthony Lovato. The band is the Official Mest.
It is that, actually.
Right?
Okay, I already know. I follow you. I like your stuff, dude.
And then for all of our shit, you go to messedmusic.com. It'll always have our tour dates. You can find merch there. Like, we use that as like the home base for all the shiz. So awesome. You can find everything there. But
I admire you, dude. I admire you and respect you.
Same thing to you, buddy.
You never gave up and you're doing your thing and you're raising a family, and that's badass, dude. And so just keep going, because you guys rock, and I love you, brother. And thanks for doing this interview.
Love you too, buddy. Thanks for having me, man.
All right. Stay rad.
Talk to you soon.
Peace.